Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. It's wonderful to be here with you. I haven't been here for a weekly gathering in at least 6 weeks, I think, because last time it was the weekly gathering, I was traveling, and Bob Dearwater covered for me. Thank you very much, Barb. So it's wonderful to be here with y'all this morning. Welcome on this beautiful, beautiful December day. Can you believe it? Years just zoom by, don't they? I think the next time I lead a weekly gathering, it will probably be 2015. That's my guess. So why don't we start with the welcoming song? And the welcoming song that I have is the one that I always love to bring with me on Sunday morning. It's the one called Awakening by Deborah Premel and Mitten. Please, as I play this song, take this opportunity to greet one another on the board. Here we go. I think here we go. For some reason, I don't have any sound. Here it comes.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic. Awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody. Melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Down now. And I'm also, before I play the next song, I just checked my settings and my output volume is very, very, very low. So I'm going to turn it up so that next time we have a little bit easier time of hearing the music. I want to share with you a little bit about Awakening Together. Probably most of you are aware of the website address. It's awakening-together.org. And if you go to the website and click on About Us, there's a new page about us that's been added in the last month or so. And the name of that page is Forms of Worship. So awakening-together.org, about us, forms of worship. Thank you, Barb, for putting the link in the room. And I just want to share with you today a little bit from that page, since that's new. It says, Awakening Together is a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We believe that all religions, all scripture, and all spiritual masters ultimately point to one truth, for there can only be one absolute truth, not many. And since we are all inherently a part of the truth as living beings, we can each realize truth as a direct intuition, regardless of our religion, culture, or spiritual tendencies. Therefore, our forms of worship come from all of the great spiritual traditions, and the exact form of worship may vary from one individual member to the next. Our basic forms of worship include, and then right now I'm just going to read the list, but if you go look at that page, you'll see there's a little paragraph kind of describing each of these forms of worship. Prayer, contemplation, teaching or sharing, meditation, silent mantra, surrender, self-inquiry, forgiveness, focusing on the I Am presence, musical worship, satsang, deep acceptance and allowance, deep acceptance and allowance, observing or noticing, and journaling. So, yeah, if you get a chance, have a look at those forms of worship. I think that you will probably find yourself there in one or more of those forms of worship. Before writing that page, I spent some time in contemplation and looking around and trying to capture what might be the primary practices of our members. So now I'm going to move on to our announcements portion of our weekly gathering. I think all of you know that when we first started Awakening Together, it was always our intention to apply for legal church status with the IRS. And we don't have a particular reason for doing that. We're already a 501c3 organization, so all donations are already tax deductible. I personally am not aware of anything that we have to gain through legal church status. It's just that that was the guidance, and we like to follow guidance because we don't really know where the guidance is taking us, so we don't want to skip any of the steps, even if we don't understand them. So we have applied for legal church status. Our application was sent to the IRS on December 10th. It included two very brief forms, IRS forms. It also included a 23-page attachment answering questions that were on the forms, and then 13 appendices that provided the documentation we needed to support those answers. And all of this was put together very nicely in a three-ring binder with a really nice cover sheet and a table of contents. And I want to say thank you to Jacqueline Eckert. She helped me a lot. I wrote the first draft of the application for church status. She proofed it and gave me some recommendations, including the recommendations about the nice presentation, you know, the three-ring binder, the table of contents, all of that. Then I rewrote it, gave it to her. She gave me feedback again. And then we got something that we were ready to show to the member board of trustees, and David Hempel made an additional comment, which resulted in one additional change. But we did get that sent in last week after really nearly 2 years of work. We started working on this application in January of 2013, and it was sent in on December of 2014. So that's nearly 2 years of work. A lot of people worked on it. All of the member board of trustees in some way were involved. Tom Conway was also heavily involved because he wrote a lot of the policies and procedures, which were a big part of it. So I see Roy is asking, so it is a church now? In the United States of America, you can actually declare yourself a church. You do not have to seek legal church status. So in that way, you could say that we are a church. In order to be a church, you declare yourself a church, which we really did with our constitution. And then you have to act like a church. And there are laws that govern a church, but we act like a church. So in that way, we are a church. But they also encourage you, although it's not required, to get that validated by the IRS by applying for legal church status. So we have applied for that legal church status, and we just sent the application in on the 10th. They probably received it on Friday, or they will receive it on Monday. And I haven't been through this process before, but what I have been told by those who have been through the process before is that a caseworker will be assigned to us. And it's through our interaction with that caseworker that we will either get our legal church status or not. So I'll keep you informed as we move along, and we'll see what happens. But I did want to let you know that that application has been sent in. Another announcement that I wanted to share, and many of you I know are already aware of this as I look at who's in the room, but and this is a personal announcement about Regina Zonacres, I have decided to change the way I communicate in Facebook. So my old Facebook page is really changing dramatically. I had, 3,340 some friends. I'm now down to 200 and something, and I'm going to go lower. I'm really removing nearly everyone from that page except for family and personal friends, people that I work with on a daily basis, like the member board of trustees, the board of directors, but almost everyone else is being removed from that page, and I'm pointing everyone to a new page that I've created. I've sent many, many, many of you invitations. When I made this change, I made it very, very carefully. I went through all 3,000 plus names, and some of the names I didn't know at all. They were completely unfamiliar to me, so I just unfriended those people. But any names that I knew at all, even if I've never met you, I went to the trouble to send you an invitation to the new page first. I wanted to make sure no one was left out of the change. But even with that, some of you may not pay close attention to your notifications, so you may not have seen your invitation. So I just want you to know that you are invited to my new page. The address, if you want to find it, is www.facebook.com/RDA today. In addition to that, you could also just type in Regina Zonacres and you'll find it. The new page has the name Regina Zonacres on it. The old page, I've taken the Don out. The old page just says Regina Acres now. So when you find the page that says Regina Zonacres, and then it says something like thoughts and teachings, that's the new page. Just started up this weekend, and already 400 people have joined me there, which I'm really happy about. I'm not quite sure why I did this, except that in the last few weeks, as I've been posting spiritual teachings on my personal page, it hasn't felt right. All I can say is it felt out of harmony. It felt out of alignment. Something felt odd. I also have noticed that I've been avoiding posting personal information on that page. I was telling Danielle, you know, sometimes not to let people know what I was up to. And again, not a reason, not hiding. It just wasn't feeling right to share personal information with the world for some reason. And it wasn't feeling right making all of these spiritual posts where my family looks to check up on me. The mixture was beginning to feel uncomfortable. I've done it for years, but recently it's just been not feeling right. And so I had this page, RDA Today, that I had created a year and a half ago, I think, and literally forgotten about. And it popped up on Facebook about 2 days ago. I was in Facebook just doing what I was doing, and it popped up. And I went, oh, yeah, I forgot about that page. And that's when the solution to this discomfort just arose in my mind to move all of my spiritual friends in one place and keep my personal family and friends in another place. And that way, the kind of things that I want to share with mom and dad, you know, I can put there. You know, my aunts and uncles I can put there. And then the things that I want to share with you all, I can share in another place. And actually, I can already feel that I'm going to be sharing more broadly with the spiritual friends because I know everyone who's there is interested in it. And I'm not sharing it with people who really would rather not see it. And I know that there are friends and family who love me very much. They are very aware of the spirituality I'm involved in, but it doesn't interest them at all. And in fact, you know, maybe even causes them discomfort. And so now they won't have to look at it anymore. It feels like a very gentle, loving thing to do to me. So on my old page, I've taken away the Regina Dawn Akers, since that's how you all know me. That's just Regina Akers now. And I've hidden almost everything on that page, except if people do go, what the public will see is an invitation to my new page, and maybe just a few things. But and now what I'm doing, I'm in the process of bringing a bunch of pictures of all of us together, you know, being the family that we are, to my new page. And I'll do that slowly, a few pictures a day, so everyone can enjoy it. I'm still learning how to manage a page. I would love for you guys to be able to tag pictures there. I haven't quite figured that out yet. Also, you all are free to make posts there. They will show up on the side, but I will pay attention to every post that you make. You can message me there, and hopefully as I get better at manage the page, we'll find that this is a much better arrangement for us, because then we can just hang out and really share in a very loving way without making people uncomfortable who, in effect, kind of feel threatened by our posts. So, so again, the new Facebook page is Regina Dawn Akers Thoughts and Teachings. Be very easy to find it, I'm sure, in a Facebook search. But if not, the address is www.facebook.com/RDA today. The next announcement that I wanted to make is really, this is something that you all probably know, but I just like to bring it up every now and then, and that's about our daily contemplation circle. We do have a daily contemplation circle. It's almost every night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. On Friday nights, it's 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And I think, Lynn, I think we're still looking for someone to lead the Friday night 11 p.m. contemplation circle to facilitate that. Is that correct? I want to invite you all to come to the contemplation circles. The contemplation circles are much richer as an experience if everyone comes and shares their thoughts after the contemplation. Those of you who are in the Minister Preparation Program, I'm sure know that a part of the rich experience is that what we do during the homework is we contemplate things, and then we come together in class and everyone shares from their contemplation. And it is so much more rich listening to everyone else. Because although I may have come to a certain place in my contemplation, someone else's contemplation can really add to that. And I love the experience, and I know everyone else loves the experience, everyone who's MPP. Our daily contemplation circle has the opportunity to be that same experience for all of us. It's only in half an hour, but if we come together each evening just before we go to bed, in many cases, and spend that last bit of time together in contemplation of a daily quote, it's a wonderful way to situate ourselves before we go to bed. Now, even having said that, you'll find that I personally am not here a lot of the time. That's because I am teaching MPP classes and such, so I'm actually in another room doing something else. But for those of us who are available, it's a wonderful opportunity. And if you are available, you could come tonight and try it out with me. I will be the facilitator tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And just to give you a head start, here's today's daily quote, which will be discussing. You can also find this on awakening-together.org under the inspiration menu. But today's daily quote is, "I tell you the truth, there is nothing wrong in your being in the world, but you must direct your mind toward God. Otherwise, you will not succeed. Do your duty with one hand, and with the other, hold to God. After the duty is over, you will hold to God with both hands." And that's from Sri Ramakrishna. So please come tonight at 10 p.m. and share your contemplation thoughts on that. What I'm going to do now is share a song. And the song that I'm going to share is a new song that was sent to me by the artist this week. His name is James Eckhart, E-C-K-H-A-R-D-T. The name of the song is Forgive It. So let's have a listen. Hopefully the volume will be a little louder now.
Was he through it?
You know, he sent this song out of the blue. I don't know this person. And, oh, when I started listening, I fell immediately in love. I was so happy that he sent the song to us and asked us to play it in the sanctuary. Again, the name of the song was Forgive It, and his name is James Eckhart, but there's a D in it. So it's E-C-K-H-A-R-D-T. All right, let's go into silence and prayer. What's coming up for me now as I close my eyes in silence and prayer is just this gratitude for life, for living, for being. Sometimes we're so distracted by the mind's interpretation of life and by the mind's judgments about the events and the people that we experience, that we forget to notice that life itself is a magnificent gift. So, here's to life. Isness, being, as the precious gift that it is. Amen. So what I'm going to do next is turn the mic over to David Hempel, and he's going to read today from the Teachings of Inner Ramana. The message that he has selected is called The Purpose of Surrender, Part 2. And David, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. I'm very excited to read anything more from Ramana Maharshi and having Ramana Maharshi received through this other person and reading his work through her. Quite wonderful. And so this is page 9 of the Teachings of Inner Romana that Regina received, and this one is February 16th of 2009. And this is how it reads. Excuse me. That's not in there. The mind creates experience that is not real. It is illusion or fantasy, and it is created for the purpose of enjoyment or pleasure. But when the mind forgets reality and sees the unreal as real, fear is a necessary component. The mind is afraid because the unnatural is not natural. The mind that has forgotten reality knows that something is wrong, but it does not know what that is. It projects stories in an effort to give itself a reason for its fear, but it cannot find the answer it seeks because it is looking in the wrong direction. Its fear does not come from its own projections, and so solutions to those projections cannot end the fear. Fear comes simply from not knowing reality, and therefore, the only answer to fear is to let go of what is false and to remember, reality as true. Discarding the world is as simple as remembering that it isn't true. This is as simple as living from within instead of from without. One who is forgetting the world takes his cues from within, and when observed, he may seem to respond to without. He may even seem to respond to his thoughts, which are still without. But this is only if you observe him from without. Without will see without, and within will see within. One who is awakening to truth is also discarding the world, which includes discarding his thoughts about the world. So this one is learning to take all of his cues from within, from beyond the clouds of his thoughts. True perception is a bridge, and guidance is a bridge. To feel that one is awakened or living outside of mind when one is experiencing perception or guidance is an error. To say that one lives outside of mind when one experiences perception is to remain deluded. But to listen to guidance and to say that one is guided by mind outside of mind is not to be deluded. It is merely to describe the experience in words. It is merely to recognize that mind is needed to experience perception, but guidance is the echo of knowledge filtered through mind. One who listens to guidance may be said by others to be awakened, but this one will only say he is realized, because he realizes truth even as he experiences perception. Excuse me. He listens to knowledge because he knows that one who sees perception cannot truly see, but one who is not attached can be guided. Non-attachment and realization are one. Seeing truth is to be awakened. World-focused thought is always an error. It is attachment, and therefore, it is dreaming or remaining deluded. To help people with world-focused thoughts by providing world-focused solutions is assisting one to dream. Therefore, the awakened one who has accepted the role of continuing the awakening will not assist in world-focused concerns by providing world-focused answers. The awakened one will assist world-focus by observing the filter with the one who has a desire to awaken. When one is not world-focused, guidance within the world occurs naturally. Non-attached activity within perception is not a hindrance to awakening. Attached activity is a means of clinging to the dream. And I will turn the mic over. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. And as I mentioned, David selected today's reading. And when I look at today's reading, there is so much in this particular message. I think that for me, the one who was the scribe, the primary purpose of this message was to replace confusion with clarity. Because what happens for most of us is that when we embark on the spiritual path, what embarks on the spiritual path with us is that mind. And that mind is reading or listening to absolutely perfect teachings and then doing its own interpretation and its own thinking about. And what happens is confusion results. And we often believe our confusion for a very, very long time. And so this simple message came to kind of one by one address some very common confusions very quickly, which is why I say there's so much in it. Well, let me see if I can just run down the list of confusions that are being addressed. As you all know, at least I think most of you know A Course in Miracles, and so you may be familiar with A Course in Miracles lesson 132. Which is basically telling us that the central theme of A Course in Miracles is that the world does not exist. And this first paragraph is agreeing with that. This first paragraph is telling us that the mind creates experience that is not real. It is illusion or fantasy. And it's referring to the world. As you continue to read the message, you can tell that it is. In fact, it's asking us, in order to know reality, it's telling us later in the third paragraph that the third and fourth paragraph, it's telling us that in order to remember reality, we just need to remember that the world isn't true, right? So it's agreeing with A Course in Miracles. But one of the confusions that sometimes comes in as we read other lessons in A Course in Miracles, like the world is an attack on God, and we read that first thought that initiated the world, and it's called a tiny mad idea, which for some reason many of us interpret as a tiny bad idea. One of the confusions that comes in is that somehow there's something wrong with the world. Like, not only is the world not real, but somehow it's bad, it's wrong, it's a mistake, it shouldn't have happened. That's the confusion that comes in. The realization that the world is not real is simply true. But the idea that it's bad, that it's a mistake, that it shouldn't have happened, that we have done something wrong by allowing the mind to project it, that's an error. And in fact, what Ramana is telling us is that the purpose of this was really enjoyment. Or pleasure. And by pleasure, he doesn't mean pleasure as in the opposite of suffering, which is one way the word is used, but he means that what we have been given and what we are, not only what we have been given, but what we are, is a creative process. And that creative process that we are is a blessing. Just like in the prayer before we started today, I talked about life, isness, being as a gift. Well, this creative process is an additional gift. And basically, in very simple language, what happens is what we desire becomes manifest so that it can be enjoyed. And I don't mean that at all in the way that it might immediately sound, which is the law of attraction. I don't mean that at all. What we desire at the deepest level of our being is to know ourself and be with ourself and interact with ourself. And that's the purpose of manifestation, because without a subject and an object, that interacting with ourself cannot happen. So the purpose of the world is for us to experience ourselves as subject-object, but still with the awareness that it is ourself, so that we can interact with ourself and enjoy ourself in a way that we can't without manifestation. Now, of course, that isn't what always appears to be happening. There appears to be a lot of attacking happening and a lot of other things happening rather than this embracing and this loving and this enjoying together, right? And so Inner Ramana continues, this really comes from fear. You see, because when manifestation happened, we didn't remember that this is ourself. We forgot that. We became more focused on the manifestation and less focused on the truth, and we forgot that. And it's this forgetfulness that causes fear, because we know, Inner Ramana says, we know that something's not right, something's wrong, but we don't know quite what it is. And the only thing that's not right, the only thing that's wrong, is that we've forgotten the truth. If we bring that one thing back, everything's okay. But when that one thing is forgotten, the world becomes very fearful. And then, still looking outward towards manifestation, not remembering to look towards ourselves, we start wanting to correct that fear. So a part of what has happened is the purpose of the world has become confused. The original purpose of manifestation was to know and enjoy the self in a subject-object type of experience. But then when we forgot the self and we started feeling fearful, the new purpose of the world became to somehow resolve our fear. Which is actually a helpful purpose if we start to realize the only way to resolve our fear is, again, to go back within and remember ourselves. But if we keep looking to the world to resolve the fear, we get kind of in this loop where what happens is we project problems of fear and then we try to solve them. And that can go on forever. And you can look at the world and you can, you know, look at the news and you can see all of the projections of problems of fear and all of the attempts to solve them. And this can go on and on and on. And it's not the answer. Because the answer isn't in our made-up problems. The answer is simply in remembrance. So what's really happening is we are looking away from the self at the world, when what we need to do is look back at the self and remember the self. This is like A Course in Miracles, one problem, one solution. So what the teaching of Inner Ramana is recommending then, since that's the answer, that we do that. That we look back within towards the self and remember the self, and that will change everything. But in order to do that, it's also telling us we have to accept that the world is not real. You see, if I believe that the world is real and I believe that I am a body and my family are bodies and my house and my money is my security, I'm not going to be able to stop the addiction of trying to solve those projected fear problems. Because it's going to count. It's going to matter. It matters a lot if that stuff's real. So somewhere within me, I need to be willing to accept, at least on faith, that it's not real, that it's a projection, that it's mind-made, and that the only answer is to remember the self. And I need to be willing to turn my attention, even in the midst of what appears to be problems, inward, and seek the self, seek remembrance, as the only answer to every problem. Now, Inner Ramana knows that for most of us, we can't just do that. I mean, we hear stories of people who just did that. You know, if you read about Nisargadatta Maharaj, basically his guru told him all he needed to do was focus on the I Am presence and leave everything else alone. And he did that. And he says, within 3 years, I was awake. And if you read him, you'll see that he's speaking from what this message calls an awakened perspective, not just a self-realized perspective, but an awakened perspective. So he forgot the world, focused on the I Am presence, and in 3 years remembered, and he woke up. But most of us, for some reason, don't do that. And so what we need is a little help. And that little help is being called a bridge here. And we're being told that the bridge is guidance and true perception. True perception meaning having perception interpreted by the right mind instead of the mind that believes the world. We're being told basically that we can live in the world without being involved in the world. And that is a path of awakening. But what we have to learn to do, and I'll say this again, because this is really important, and we all know it intellectually, but we need to get beyond the intellect into the true living of it. What we have to do is begin to trust that very quiet, still voice, that intuition, and disregard the thinking that we've trusted up until now. Because the thinking is world-focused. You know, for example, at the beginning of today's gathering, I said that we were applying for legal church status. And I told you that I don't know why. You know, if we get thinking involved, we could have decided a long time ago, this is way too much work. We don't need all these policies, blah, 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 blah. Let's forget about that church status thing, blah, 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 blah. And we could have just tossed the whole thing aside and be moving in some other direction. You see, thinking has its own ideas. And it's going to keep us moving around and around and around in the world. Now, I don't know how awakening together, applying for church status, and operating as a church is helpful to our awakening. I'm not claiming I do. But what I am claiming is that to receive guidance and trust it without thinking, you know, just to say, okay, and not have my own thoughts about it, not to analyze about it, that's what this message is teaching. It's similar to the more recent guidance that I received, which you all know about, which was starting a retreat center in Pueblo. Within the first 5 minutes of receiving that guidance, do you know what I decided about that guidance? Not to think about it. Not to think about it. Because if I had thought about it, there would have been a million reasons why not to start a retreat center in the first place. And several other people have already found a lot of reasons why not to have it in Pueblo. To me, it's non-negotiable because it was guidance. And you see, guidance is leading us back to the realization of ourself. Thinking is keeping us involved in illusion. You see, it's that simple. In fact, if you haven't read the teachings of Inner Ramana, if you read the teachings of Inner Ramana, you are going to find that the primary purpose of that little bitty book is to give us tools so that we stop relying on thinking and yet can continue to exist and be in this world as we're awakening. Those primary tools are surrender to inner guidance or inner intuition, saying a mantra, so that instead of being involved in mind wandering, we're quietly focused on a mantra, and practicing inquiry. Instead of just believing thoughts that pop into our mind, looking, where is this thought coming from? Noticing the thought is coming from the mind, remembering that our purpose here is to let go of the mind and to awaken beyond the mind, and therefore learn to disregard those thoughts. And those three tools are very simple. You don't even ever have to read another spiritual book or listen to another spiritual teacher as long as you live if you don't want to. Those three tools alone, if you practice them as faithfully as Nisargadatta practiced the advice from his guru, will lead to awakening. Which takes me to another confusion in the message. This is talking about when people are experiencing true perception, they've learned to be happy here. They've learned to have no problems. They've learned to be in the now. They've learned to follow intuition. Intuition is very natural. It becomes very natural. They're just moving on intuition. They're not relying on the mind. Everything is sparkling. That is not awakening. Awakening is completely beyond perception. And if you want to know someone who spoke from awakening, read I Am That by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Now it says that those of us who are not awake will look at a body, you know, like a Nisargadatta body that is awake and say, but that one's not awake. I mean, someone even said to Nisargadatta, but I see you sitting there smoking cigarettes. And Nisargadatta said to that one, that is your I am the body belief. Well, that's what this message in Inner Ramana says too. If I'm still focused on the world and believing on the world, I will think, well, that guy's not awake because I see him making this decision and doing this and doing this. But this says, I'm only seeing from my focus in the world, my I am the body belief, my the world is real belief is coloring what I see. And maybe what I should just do is realize I am not awake because I see a body. I see a person that I think is making his own decisions, right? That I think is speaking based on his own thoughts, that I think is following his own will. If I think that, I'm the one who needs to turn inward. And again, if I am in the flow and everything is sparkling and everything is easy and everything is coming via this natural intuition and there isn't much thinking going on, I don't want to think I'm done, I'm awake, because the ego will find its way back in. I want to continue the practice that's brought me this far until I pop and I see as Nisargadatta describes seeing. Which, from what I can tell when I read Nisargadatta, is completely different than the way I see. Even though my scene is so cleaned up compared to once upon a time, this cleaned up scene is nothing like what Nisargadatta is describing. So I need to continue the practices that have brought me this far. Another piece of clarity in here, which I think we all know this one intellectually, but we forget when, you know, things seem to get tough, is that all world-focused thinking is an error. Oh, I love that, Lynn. She has, be vigilant to your last breath. Thank you. I love that. In fact, quickly send me an email because I'll forget, and I'll make that one of the daily quotes. Be vigilant to the last breath. Lynn Johnson, please do that because that's beautiful. But what I was about to say is that world focused thinking is always an error. So when I have a problem, whether it's a health problem, a financial problem, a romance problem, and my mind gets to thinking about how can I resolve this problem, what this is saying is I have always, always, always slipped back into ego when I do that. Always. There's not an exception. World-based thinking is always an error. And not only that, but it talks about the awakened one. And how the awakened one would never assist one with a world-focused solution. The awakened one just helps one to be aware of the mind. As the scribe, I can tell you that what this was really referring to was the awakened one that already is within me. You see, there is an awakened one already within me, even though I am not awakened. It sounds funny, but it's true. When I teach, that awakened one speaks. And this is helping me to notice the awakened one within me. You see, if one of you come to me with a, quote, problem, a health problem, for example, and I start offering potential solutions, you know, have you talked to the doctor about this drug? I saw this drug on TV, and it looks like that may alleviate your pain. Or have you thought about trying nutrition instead of drugs? Or, you know, it's saying, I'm not speaking from my awakened mind if I do that. But if I help you to focus on the fact that you are being now, you are ising now, help you focus on awareness instead of the pain, then I am speaking from the awakened one in me. So this paragraph is helping us to see that even though we may not be, quote, fully awake like Nisargadatta, awakening does already exist. And so even though we may not be fully awake like Nisargadatta, we can speak from the awakened one. We can choose to always speak from the awakened one, just like we can always choose to follow intuition instead of thinking. In other words, as crazy as this sounds, even though we may not be awake like Nisargadatta, we can abide as that awakening now. And every time we see something that is not that awakening, we can choose to just look at it and in no way speak from it or act on it. I think the mic went away, so let me just try and say that last sentence again. Even though we are not awake now, like Nisargadatta was, awakening is now in each of us. Which means we can choose to be mindful, pay attention, and speak and act only from the awakened one. And whenever the world focus shows up, choose to just look at it with the awakened one within us, but not speak or act on it. Is that clear? I just want to make sure people can hear me. I see that Kathy said the mic is in and out, and Barb says her mic is locked. The mic is out now. Hello again, everyone. Can you hear me now? Is anyone able to hear me? Still in and out. Okay, Cindy can hear me on and off. Well, that's okay. I was basically done. Let me type in the last thought. The last thought is, we can all choose now to live from the awakened one within and choose to only watch the world-based one? Did you see what I typed? Sonia has written, thank you. Without a mic, the awakened one still speaks. Is there any sound now? Let's go into contemplation, shall we? And if you choose, you can donate to Awakening Together. Other people's mics are clicking on and off for some reason, and mine is. I will play music. Maybe you will hear. Those who are listening to the recording can hear, and maybe those on the radio can hear also.
Why do you seek the path that leads away? Deeper into the woods, when home is your aim. Why do you pitch your tent on foreign land? Turn toward the south, go back the way you came. Enter with love the temple of your heart. Heart is the holy sanctum where I reside. Offer to me the ruby of your mind. That is the sweetest offering of mine that has died. Be still and know that I am. I am that I am. Be still and know that I am. I am. I am. enter with love the temple of your heart. Heart is the holy sanctum where I reside. Offer to me the ruby of your mind. That is the sweetest offering, a mind that has died. Be still, know that I am. I am that I am. Be still, know that I am. I am that I am.
We are having technical difficulties in the room today, and they are unable to hear me. I think they heard most of what was said, but they did not hear the last few lines of what was said, and they did not hear the Kirtana song that was just played. It was called Ramana's Song by Kirtana, by the way. And so there won't be the open sharing that we normally have, but I would like to share the minister's gratitude, which is how we end each weekly gathering. Also, I would like to mention that on awakening-together.org under the events menu, you can find out about upcoming opportunities to get together. One is in Baja, Mexico, March 1 to 7. And the other is the CMC conference in New York City in mid-April. So go have a look at the awakening-together.org events and see if either of those events are right for you, because we love it when we get together and worship together. I'm just going to play the last song I had selected for today's gathering. This song is by Scott Grace. It's an oldie but a goodie, one of my very, very first favorite songs when I started this spiritual path, and it remains one of my favorites. It's called You Guide Me.
Stream in the desert, like a path through the snow. Wherever I am in this world, you're guiding me home. Like a stream in the guiding me home.
Wherever I am.